Blog Talk Radio.
Got a good one today. I really do believe that. So the Democrats unveiled their better deal proposal. I'm going to break that down for you. Got some good things, got some bad things. I'm going to go through it with a fine-tooth comb, as they say, which is a weird phrase, but that's what I'm going to do. And we're going to see what they're lacking, because they're lacking quite a bit. And then I actually have a pretty big announcement coming after that. It's, you know how the Democratic Party loves to berate people on the left about it? You have to unify with us, goddammit. We're going to keep telling you to unify with us, please, for election time. We have to win, unify. Challenge accepted. The left has actually unified in a way that is unbelievable, and I guarantee you the Democratic Party won't like it. So you'll see what I mean in just a second here. Well, not just a second, but, you know, in 12 minutes or so. We'll do that for the second story. Then I'm going to give everybody an update on the issue of Medicare for All and Justice Democrats. Justice Democrat Representative Ro Khanna went on Fox News and ran circles around a Fox News host on that issue. So really, really, really great stuff there. And later on, John McCain was diagnosed with brain cancer, and you'll never guess what they're still planning on trying to do with him. And we're really having a conversation about whether or not the president can pardon himself. Oh, God, what is happening? This is insane. Okay, now, without further ado, let's jump into it. And we're going to do that with the Democrats' better deal. We'll see just how better it really is. So the Democrats unveiled their better deal proposals, and it's pretty much a mixed bag. So this is Vox reporting on it. Betting it's the message voters will want to hear ahead of the 2018 midterm elections, Democrats are releasing a suite of these proposals, collectively called a better deal, on Monday. They say the better deal, an obvious allusion to Teddy Roosevelt's Square Deal and Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, is necessary to crack down on monopolies and the concentration of economic power against a government that benefits the special interests and the very wealthy. Interesting. The plan is a populist turn for the party less than a year after it ran and lost to Donald Trump on a platform that largely defended the economic status quo under President Barack Obama. The Better Deal's first step is a plan to create 10 million jobs through a mixture of tax credits for employers who hire at high wages and a national infrastructure program similar to the one Hillary Clinton proposed in the presidential campaign. The second main plank released on Monday is a sweeping suite of plans aimed at curtailing the skyrocketing costs of American prescription drugs, including a new regulatory agency and broad new oversight powers. Over the past few years, press reports have increasingly highlighted a handful of pharmaceutical companies that exponentially jack up the prices of drugs that consumers have no choice but to buy. The third plank is a list of antitrust proposals in line with what Senator Elizabeth Warren has called for the party to adopt. Facing rising corporate inequality and markets increasingly dominated by a tiny handful of firms, Democrats will propose a new federal office and federal guidelines that would aim to make it more difficult for companies to merge and make it easier for federal regulators to call attention to their anti-competitive behavior. Okay. So let's break this down. First, we'll go to the Elizabeth Warren-inspired proposals, which is the last one that I just went through with you. The idea to basically bring back enforcing antitrust laws, is that a good thing or a bad thing? That's unquestionably a good thing, and that is a giant step in the right direction. Now, from a messaging standpoint, here's the problem with that. It doesn't resonate, even though that actually is a populist idea and a left idea. It doesn't resonate, and it's not pithy and soundbitey enough to really, you know, catch on in a way where middle America goes, yeah, man, we got to reinforce those antitrust laws now, don't we? No, people will be like, trust anti-what? Antifreeze? What are we talking about here? I don't even know. What do you mean? So in terms of the policy of that, it's good. And again, they say it's Elizabeth Warren inspired, which, you know, Elizabeth Warren was the one who came up with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which has been just absolutely incredible and a gigantic step in the right direction. It's the best part of Dodd-Frank by far and away. So good on the policy, bad on the messaging part of it. And that's a little concerning because when you talk about, hey, what messaging are we going to do? I mean, the actual message should be important. Policy is obviously the most important thing, but how you push that policy, sell that policy, talk about that policy, it should be in alignment with how good the policy actually is, and it doesn't seem to me like this is very witty or pithy, and it doesn't really cut through so that people get like, oh, okay, so it looks like they're fighting for me on this one. On the pharmaceutical drugs one, okay, that's good too. So they're saying one of the main things they're going to push for is we want Medicare to be able to negotiate with drug companies for better prices. So this is Bernie Sanders inspired, and it's something that the party should have been doing all along. But remember, Barack Obama stabbed everybody in the back and continued the same deal that George W. Bush made, which said that Medicare is legally not allowed to negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies for better prices. So think about that. We pay way more for our prescription drugs than any other modern nation. So Bernie Sanders came along and said, well, let's import our drugs from Canada and pay less as a result. And many Democrats abandoned him and said, no, we're not going to do that. So now the Democratic Party is saying, okay, now we're getting serious and we're putting it as one of our main things that we're going to push for. Okay, so that's a good thing. Then they get to infrastructure. The infrastructure plan they came up with, they just basically copied and pasted Hillary Clinton's. And when you go through the details of Hillary Clinton's, it's $275 billion worth of infrastructure spending. Guys, the Society of Civil Engineers, the people who do the grading, the ranking of our system every few years, of our infrastructure system. First of all, we get a D+, so we're falling apart at the seams. We're crumbling all over the place. But second of all, they say we need a multi-trillion-dollar investment if we really want to get serious. And do I want to get serious about this? Oh, absolutely. I want the United States to actually have the number one infrastructure in the world. I want updated airports, updated roads, updated bridges, high-speed rail. I want everything to look beautiful. So for them to say $275 billion worth of infrastructure spending, I mean, I guess you get credit for the thought that you actually give a shit about infrastructure, but I think even the Republicans are proposing more than that. Now, let's be clear. The Republicans, their idea of proposing about $1 trillion worth of infrastructure spending or thereabouts, it's mostly a ruse to privatize the infrastructure and literally hand it over to Goldman Sachs. So their plan is worse, no doubt about it. But the dollar amount that we're talking about here is terrible. what are you thinking? What are you saying? So there, you could have done a lot better on the infrastructure portion of it. So here's the part that drives me a little bit crazy. So they're saying, oh, better deal, and they're alluding to the Square deal and the New Deal. And they say, well, it's necessary to, quote, crack down on monopolies and the concentration of economic power against a government that benefits the special interests and the very wealthy. So they say that. But here's the thing. You're not actually doing anything to address that part. Like, you have some decent things, okay, antitrust, reinforcing the antitrust laws, the Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders inspired proposals, so the one about prescription drugs. Good. I'm going to give you credit for that because credit where credit is due, and it's deserved there. But when you say, oh, the problem is that there's a government that benefits the interests, the special interests, and the very wealthy. Why? Why did that happen? How did that happen? Do you have an answer? You're accurately describing the problem. Now, what the Democrats usually do is they say that and then they kind of try to pawn it off all to the Republicans. Like, oh, yeah, it's the Republicans' fault. They're the ones who benefit the special interests and the very well. No. That's a bipartisan problem. They might be worse. They might be even more corrupt. But you're corrupt, too. So how do we get to the point where we have a government that benefits the special interests and the very wealthy? The answer is the colossal amount of money in our politics. The answer is that money equals free speech, according to the Supreme Court. And where in your list of proposals, your better deal proposals, does it address that? You don't address that, not even a little bit. There's nothing there about that. There's nothing about campaign finance reform. There's nothing about getting money out of the political system. And then whenever you push these guys, they give you the Hillary Clinton answer, which is really a dodge. And they'll say, well, no, we agree with you on that. We need to get dark, unaccountable money out of politics. Why did you add the words dark and unaccountable? Because what they want to do is, let's just increase transparency. So let's let you know which corporations and billionaires are buying your politicians, but don't actually do anything about it. Don't actually stop that from happening. So the Democrats are not going to be serious, and you can't take them seriously until they address the fundamental flaw at the heart of our system, which is the corrupting influence of money in politics. Because as long as they keep taking corporate money, as long as they keep taking PAC money and lobbyist money, billionaire money, they're not going to seriously address any of the issues that they're paying lip service to here. They might do a few decent things, throw a bone here and there, but they're not going to ever seriously address the fundamental flaws within our system. So, and you might say, well, Kyle, come on. They're not going to be able to get that through a Republican Congress and yada, 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 yada. Well, first of all, I'm unimpressed by people who say, I can't try to do the right thing because it's hard. That doesn't mean anything. But also, even if that's true, oh, they wouldn't be able to get it done anyway. Well, then at least take the pledge, the Justice Democrats pledge. We take no corporate money and no PAC money. At least say, all right, here's how we're going to do our fundraising from here on out. We're going to raise in small dollar amounts from regular people. Because that's the way, within the current disgusting system, that's the only way to guarantee you're going to have principled politicians. There's no other way to guarantee that. That's the only way you're going to guarantee you have principled politicians. People who raise money, politicians who raise money from the people, so they're beholden to the people, and they do what the people want. Now, again, that's not the end-all be-all. The end-all be-all is getting money out of the system and getting a public financing system set up. That's the end-all be-all to get basically private money out of politics, corporate money, all that out of politics. In the meantime, the only way to make sure that politicians are not corrupt is to have politicians do the Justice Democrats model, raise it from the people. Now, the downside of that is, of course, we're at an institutional disadvantage. We're at a permanent disadvantage because, like, Joe Manchin is raising money out the wazoo, even though he's massively unpopular. How does that happen? He just goes to the special interests. He goes to corporations, he goes to PACs, he goes to lobbyists, he goes to billionaires. Hey, I need help. I'm going running for re-election. And he gets in a handful of checks, he gets more than we can raise from all these people giving, you know, $27 at a time, to use Bernie's number. So that's a problem. But you know what? We got to suck it up and deal with it because we refuse. Corruption is not an option. That's not on the table for us. We must have principled politicians or else what's the point? So, and that's why we've been relying on you guys. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. If you want to donate to Paula Jean Swearingen and other Justice Democrats who are trying to take back the Democratic Party and make it what it should have been all along. And that leads me to my final point about this, better deal. Notice something. They didn't mention Medicare for All. They didn't mention it. Why didn't you mention it? What's going on here? What's going on? You didn't mention it? Oh, and also, as part of their, I believe it was part of their infrastructure portion of this, it's a lot of it is tax credits. So they're using a Republican idea, and they're bold, new, we're going to do tax credits, everybody. Oh, no. What are you doing? But it's stuff like that. They're still leaning. They still have that clear streak of corporatism and centrism and neoliberalism in them that's ruining them. So they don't say anything about Medicare for All. They don't say anything about free college. They don't say anything about ending the wars and using that money to reinvest in our infrastructure. So I'm just explaining to them as a matter of fact, you're not going to get people excited. You don't just get to, let's enforce our antitrust laws. Yeah. You don't get to go out there and say some shit like that and expect people to fall over themselves to go run to the voting booth to try to get you in there. You want to talk about a real bold message? Medicare for All. Free college. And you don't see that. That's one of those things where you don't need a messaging strategy. For to come up with antitrust laws or reinforce them, yes, that's a good thing. But you also would need to message that properly to explain to people what it is because they don't know. People know what Medicare for All is. People know what free college is. And those things are overwhelmingly popular. So you go out there and say, Medicare for All, free college. People go, oh, shit, I want to vote for that. Damn right I want to vote for that. Legalizing marijuana. What if you put – they might say like, oh, come on. That's one of those issues. What are you going to do? You're going to put that in your platform? You're going to put that in your new strategy? Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. You got over 60% of Americans now want to legalize it. It's not just like a side issue. If you say we're going to end the drug war and legalize marijuana, right there you're saying we're going to save – trillions of dollars. We've already spent $1 trillion fucking dollars on the drug war. We got nothing to show for it. People have died as a result of the drug war. How many lives have been ruined as a result of the drug war? You got people locked up for nonviolent drug offenses. What, are you kidding me? Imagine the Democrats went out there. They said, we're going to end the drug war. We're going to free every nonviolent drug offender. And we're going to legalize marijuana. Imagine they said that. They think, like, in their minds, they're like, please, we need to be respectable. Here in Washington, we're distinguished and honorable gentlemen. That saying an issue like that is below us. Guys, it's overwhelmingly popular. You're increasing freedom and liberty. And not to mention the gigantic amount of tax revenue and boost to the economy because you're opening up a multi-billion dollar industry overnight. We've seen the numbers. It's amazing what's happening in Colorado right now. So they say bold. This isn't bold. You're inching in the right direction, but you're not addressing the fundamental core problem, which is money in politics, and you're not hitting, perhaps, the two top Democratic issues. You know, you say, oh, millennials, they don't go out to vote for us. What the hell's going on here? Well, maybe if you propose Medicare for All and free college, they fucking vote for you. And maybe they do it with a goddamn smile on their face because you're actually addressing issues that matter to them. So now, to be fair to them, I think as part of either this portion or the next portion of the rollouts that they're doing of their bold economic agenda, they are going to do a living wage proposal. They are going to do a $15 minimum wage proposal. That's good, and we'll give them credit for that. But you got to – come on, man. There are certain ones that are non-negotiable that they still aren't on board with, Medicare for All, free college being two of them. So – and they have, of course they haven't mentioned ending the wars. They're still kind of for many of them. So they're trying. They're inching in the right direction, but you got to address the core problem. You have to take the Justice Democrats pledge, and you have to hit the most important issues, free college, Medicare for All, and the wars, and other issues. There are many more. But I want to say meet the old boss, same as the old – meet the new boss, same as the old boss, but we got to be fair, and we'll say – meet the new boss, slightly better than the old boss, but not good enough. I'm reminding myself of Bernie now in the debate. Not good enough. Not good enough. Fingers. That always gets me. But anyway, there you have it. If you want real Democrats with backbone who can prove that we are not corrupt, JusticeDemocrats.com. We take no corporate money, no PAC money. Read our platform. Every candidate stands for everything in those platforms, in that platform, I should say. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. Let's go win this thing, and let's make sure that every Democrat represents a populist left vision. Okay. Now, speak of the devil. I got another one here for you. This is the big announcement, ladies and gentlemen. This is the big announcement. Now, the Democratic Party loves to berate the left about unity. And they want us all to come together so we can win. They always say that around election time. You got to unify. I don't know why you guys aren't unify. Unify. It's unify. You got to have unity. And just when you have unity, you win. And if you don't have unity, the big bad Republicans win. And Republicans are bad. And you unify, 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 unify. Well, guess what? Justice Democrats and the rest of the actual left, the grassroots populist left, we're unifying. And we're unifying in an incredible way. I'm going to get to the details of that in just a second here. And we're unifying around Bernie Sanders' agenda. So, you know, ideas that are actually overwhelmingly popular. So, first, let me tell you exactly who Justice Democrats are now working with. We're officially working with the following groups. Our Revolution. We should just pause and let that marinate a little bit in our brains, because I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me on Twitter and many others who are involved in Justice Democrats and have said, you're doing this, they're doing that, it's so similar, you guys seem to agree on virtually everything, what's going on, why don't you guys work together? Well, we've done some little things here and there before. This is the biggest thing we've done so far. And again, I'm going to get to the specifics. Hold your horses just a little bit. Let me go through the rest of who we're working with, because what did I tell you guys from the beginning? I told you. Now, Justice Democrats is an attempt to take back the Democratic Party and make the Democratic Party represent the Bernie wing of the party. And a lot of people say, look, that's too far gone. That's not a good idea and all this stuff. And our response to that has always been, you know what? We don't necessarily disagree with you. We're your ally. If you want to try the third party route, if you want to try as an independent, if you want to try from outside the party to get victories for a populist left platform, we're not going to oppose you. We care about the actual policies. I don't care how they get done. Our calculation at Justice Democrats was that the path of least resistance, where we are most likely to actually win, is to try to take back the Democratic Party, because there's so many systemic barriers put there for third parties on purpose. And it's almost like handicapping yourself and swinging a sledgehammer at your kneecap before you run the marathon. We said, you know what? How about we don't swing a sledgehammer at our kneecap before we do the marathon? Let's try to take it over from within the party. So now, again, for everybody that's trying the third party route, we love you. And we, as long as you're fighting for the same things we're fighting for, which many of you are, then we're going to support you. Of course we are. There's no doubt about that. So as I said from the beginning, there's much more unity with Justice Democrats among people who are outside the party but who believe in the same things than there's unity with Justice Democrats and the rest of the Democrats. The establishment Democrats, the corporate Democrats, cannot stand us, and they're doing everything in their power to ignore us or downplay us. So I told you from the beginning, we're allies with people from outside and from within. As long as you're fighting for the right policy goals, we're with you. We're on your team. And now we have further proof of that. We're working with Our Revolution, Democratic Socialists of America, Democracy for America, Progressive Democrats of America, hashtag all of us, Common Defense, National Nurses United, who we've done some things with previously, Working Families Party, Millennials for Revolution, the Women's March, Labor for Our Revolution, People for Bernie, Good Jobs Nation, Young Progressives Demanding Action, Healthcare Now, Brand New Congress, Food and Water Action, and Fight for 15. So this might be unprecedented, guys. I mean, this is gargantuan, colossal news. We have virtually the entire grassroots left. There's a few here and there that are missing, but we'll talk to them. We're working on it. We're trying to get actual unity among the people who really believe in the right things and are fighting for the right things to get change for the American people. We're seeing a coming together moment and real unity among the actual left that I don't know if we've ever seen before. So this is colossal. This is gargantuan. This is unreal. And this makes me really, really excited. So we're all officially working together, and we're calling on congressional Democrats to support the People's Platform. Now, what is the People's Platform? Well, it kind of speaks for itself. The People's Platform is a list of policy goals that the American people overwhelmingly support and are calling for. But the Democrats have been hesitant. I don't know. Maybe I'll do it. Maybe I'll not. Let me pick only some of them that I'll be for. No. We're calling on you, the congressional Democrats, to come out and say, we support the People's Platform. And we created a petition to try to get them to that point. Now, some people might be cynical. They say, well, come on, man. What do you a petition? Ooh. Like, oh, that's strong. Actually, yes, it is. Why? Because we did this with Medicare for All. You guys, through the strength of our petition with Justice Democrats and Brand New Congress and National Nurses United, you guys were able to move over 40 congresspeople on the issue of Medicare for All because they got scared, because they thought they'd lose their jobs, because we were mobilizing and organizing and telling them, you come on board with this policy or else, or you lose your job. And then a lot of them said, oh, what? Yeah, Medicare for All, totally. No, I totally agree. Yeah, let me sign. Of course. Oh, I can't wait to vote for it. Medicare for All's amazing. I love it so much. That's all because of you. You have to push politicians to the right position through organizing, through protesting, through hard work. And that's what that was, the Medicare for All petition. Now, we're doing another one for the People's Platform. Well, what's in the People's Platform? First and foremost, Medicare for All. Well, we're not fucking around. Some people might accuse us, you guys are repetitive. Damn fucking right. Some people make fun of my show and they go, oh, Kyle, I mean, whatever. Yeah, I guess he's okay, but he's so repetitive. Yeah, because it's not like on Monday, Medicare for All matters, but on Wednesday, it doesn't. No, it still fucking matters. People die all the time because they don't have access to basic health care in America. Of course I'm going to talk about it. Of course I'm going to hammer it home. Of course I'm going to be grating on the nerves from time to time, because it's an issue that I care about and everybody should care about, because we have millions of people who are uninsured. Medical bankruptcy is one of the top causes of bankruptcy. And the supposed Liberal Party, not nearly enough of them, are on board with it. We still have 80 that are not on board with it. So now we have to force them to that position. And we have to force the Senate Democrats for sure to that position. We're not fucking around. 62% of the American people now want Medicare for All. There are more Republicans who want Medicare for All than don't want Medicare for All. What are we waiting for? It's a no-brainer. Is this a democracy or is this not a democracy? In a democracy, as long as you're not dealing with a constitutional issue, then the politicians are supposed to represent you and what you want. But they're ignoring us here. They're not going to ignore us anymore. Thing number one, People's Platform, Medicare for All, H.R. 676. Then, what's thing number two? I probably don't even have to say it. You guys could probably guess it because you know how we roll and you know exactly what we stand for. Free college tuition. This is a People's Platform. Too far left. Really? It's too far left? Slovenia has free college. Slovenia. We can't do what Slovenia can do, but we have the nerve to go around and say, we're number one. Look at my foam finger. Isn't this great? What are we number one in? Obesity, mass incarceration. How about we're number one in healthcare? How about we fight to do that and get Medicare for All? How about we fight to become number one with free college? We could do it. Well, we don't have the money. We spent $7 trillion in Iraq. $7 trillion. And we can't have free college. Get the fuck out of here. We already have public high school, free high school, elementary school. Why would we not do free college? Okay. Workers' rights is the next one. H.R. 15. It's the Raise the Wage Act. There we're talking about getting a living wage. So the first three, Medicare for All, free college, living wage. Then we get to women's rights, H.R. 771, equal access to abortion coverage in health insurance, which is called the EACH Act of 2017, equal access to abortion coverage in health insurance. So as everybody knows, what happened with the Supreme Court? They said, well, look, if you have a religious employer and they're a fundamentalist, yeah, they could cherry pick for you what is and isn't covered in your health insurance. So they could say, you know what, I have an objection to covering contraceptives, so I'm not going to cover, I'm going to axe that from you, my employee's health insurance. Where's the line? What next? you know, I don't believe in vaccines as the employer, so I'm not going to let you vaccinate your kid because you're my employee. I don't want the health insurance plan to cover vaccines. Where does this end? Where does this end? Well, we're drawing a bright red line, and we're saying, no, how about we have equal access to abortion coverage and health insurance? All right, next, voting rights, H.R. 2840. That's, guys, this is so important, and I make the mistake of not talking about this enough. It's the Automatic Voter Registration Act. So the way it works in America, you already know they're trying to disincentivize you from voting. That's why we vote on a Tuesday. People are at work, oh my God, I don't have time, I got to pick up the kids, it's a busy day, this, and this. Yeah, that's on purpose. That's on purpose. They try to make it so that fewer people vote. Well, what we're doing is we're saying, well, let's get rid of the barriers. Break down the barriers. Let's actually break down the barriers in a way that makes sense. And in a way that makes sense, it's let's do automatic voter registration. You don't have to worry, oh, I didn't get my card, I didn't fill out the thing, I didn't do this. No, automatic voter registration. And that would make it so hopefully you increase turnout because everybody's automatically registered. So if you want to vote, you know, oh, I don't have to, you know, jump through hurdles or anything. Let me just go. Let me just go vote. Automatic voter registration. That's H.R. 2840. Next in the platform, environmental justice. We're going to be in favor of a climate change bill. It's a renewable energy bill, a green technology revolution, and we have Congress people who are crafting that. And so we don't have the exact number of the bill yet, but when that bill does come out, it will be an environmental justice climate change bill on renewable energy, and that's going to be one of the main things that we're asking congressional Democrats to get on board with. Then we have criminal justice and immigrant rights, H.R. 3227, the Justice is Not for Sale Act. So we have Republicans running around talking about deporting dreamers. You know, we're talking about flat-out unconstitutional acts against immigrants. Remember when we covered the story? There was an immigrant with a brain tumor who they took out of the hospital and sent back to immigration detention. What? What? Stuff like that goes on all the time. Even under Obama, he broke the record for deportations. Well, we're trying to fight back and make sure that the Democratic Party stands up and is a strong voice against the mistreatment of immigrants. And then also we have Taxing Wall Street, H.R. 1144, the Inclusive Prosperity Act. We don't even need to get into all the details of the various ways that we should be taxing Wall Street. We have the transaction tax, for example. You have all these high frequency tradings that go on where if all you do is take like a penny per transaction, you make it so that we can fund gigantic programs. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think one of Bernie Sanders' proposals, I think it was his free college tuition bill. It was just from a tax on high-frequency trading on Wall Street. He was able to fund all of that. He was able to fund free college through doing a transaction tax on Wall Street. I mean, we're talking about, guys, stop and think about it. If you go to work and you bust your ass all year round, let's say you're a secretary. You might make $65,000 a year thereabouts, and, you know, it's maybe $70,000, and you're paying like, what, 20-25% in taxes? Meanwhile, Mitt Romney sits on his Mormon ass all day, and he gets to make $17 million and pay 15% in taxes. Why? Because the capital gains tax is lower than the income tax. Capital gains is when your money makes money through investments. So he effectively can do nothing and just sit around all year, make millions of dollars, and pay a lower tax rate than you when you bust your ass. Is that fair? Does that make sense, that system? No, it's a system that's biased in favor of the rich. And our tax system is massively biased in favor of the rich. We're going to fight back against that, and one way of doing that is by taxing Wall Street through H.R. 1144. So this is what we're fighting for. This is the people's platform, and we have unity among the left calling for this. So now, who's the burden on, ladies and gentlemen? Let me ask you. Because they scream at us all the time, you got to unify, goddamn leftists, unify. Why don't you unify? So now we're flipping it back on you, congressional Democrats. Unify. Why don't you unify? What are you waiting for? We unified. You're the one who's not unifying. Are you going to unify with us or not? You want to unify? Unify behind the people's platform. That's it. Very simple. And if you do that, you'll be right in agreement with our revolution, Democratic Socialists of America, Democracy for America, Progressive Democrats of America, all of us, Common Defense, National Nurses United, Working Families Party, Millennials for Revolution, Women's March, Labor for Revolution, People for Bernie, Good Jobs Nation, Young Progressives Demanding Action, Healthcare Now, Brand New Congress, Food and Water Action, Fight for 15. We already unified. What the fuck are you waiting for? So, go. Go. Now, that's where you guys come in. JusticeDemocrats.com/progress. JusticeDemocrats.com/progress. You go, you sign that petition right now, because this is very important. And again, you might say, well, it doesn't really matter. I'm just one fucking signature. It's not going to make a difference. It's not going to make a difference. Again, look at what we did with Medicare for All. You moved over 40 congresspeople. You did that. Justice Democrats. You did that. And guess what? As a result of that, we're making waves in Washington. You don't move over 40 congresspeople without people taking notice. John Conyers, the person who proposed H.R. 676, the Medicare for All bill, has said publicly, repeatedly, dude, it wasn't me, it was just the Democrats. I had the bill sitting there for a while. I couldn't get that many people on board. It was Justice Democrats. He's thanked us publicly. He said, okay, look, what? You got, hey, credit where credit is due. They're the ones who organized. They're the ones who mobilized. They're the ones who got the politicians to come on board. We're making waves. You're having an effect on policy in Washington. You're pushing Democrats to your position because you're not taking any shit, and you're not stopping. You're continuing until we win. And they're recognizing that, and they get it. They get it. It's not, oh, they're going to do it out of the kindness of their hearts. No, it's that they're scared they're going to lose their goddamn jobs, as it should be. Do what we want in a democracy, or you will lose your job. JusticeDemocrats.com/progress. Sign that petition. There's strength in numbers, and we're going to get the Democratic Party on board with this legislation. Okay. I got to take a break, guys. When we come back, I got a whole bunch more stuff. We got Ro Khanna. We got what Democrats are – oh, excuse me, what Republicans are trying to do with John McCain, as John McCain is in a hospital room somewhere getting treatment for cancer. So do not miss any of this, because – it's all really important, and it's some crazy stuff. So stay right there. Oh,
on myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake so I'm gonna slap you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Girl, please forgive me if this shit.
All right, we're back, baby.
Cause I can cook a kilo by my chest.
We are back, we are back, we are back. Let's go to Rokana and see what he's got here for us. This is fun. Justice Democrat Congressman Rokana went on Fox News to push Medicare for All. And the host got a little more than she bargained for when he proceeded to run circles around her.
I want to get your take on the possibility of a single-payer healthcare system, and is that something that Democrats could really get behind?
We would, and you know, the president in his own book, The America We Deserve, touted Medicare for All and touted Canada and Australia systems in the past. That's something Democrats would support. Democrats would also support his call for prescription drug reform, allowing prescription drugs to be imported. Something he called for on the campaign trail.
You do, and I know that you can read the criticism yourself. The criticisms for a single-payer healthcare system are massive. You have those who say, listen, this is going to be massive payroll tax hikes. This is going to be impossible for businesses. It's unsustainable. It's an illusionary promises. And if you look at countries who have tried it, there are critics who say it leads to rationing, and there's things that aren't included, like Medicaid expansion, some aspects of Medicaid, and also sometimes even in countries, you can look at the UK, where prescriptions aren't even covered. So is that something that we could sustain as a country? I realize states have tried it, but as a country, federally, could we sustain that?
Well, the current cost of health care, as you know, Liz, is $49 trillion over the next 10 years. And the estimates, if you go to Medicare for All, would be $32 trillion. So you'd have a $17 trillion saving. And that's because you would cut out a lot of the excessive costs of insurance companies, the hospitals that are ripping off Americans with things like facilities fees, the pharmaceutical industries that we pay the most for drugs in the world, and Medicare isn't able to negotiate, which they would be able to do. So I actually think it would be a cost saving. And most importantly, the biggest cost to small businesses and entrepreneurs, if you ask them, it's not wages, it's healthcare. It's what makes our businesses not competitive and which often leads to outsourcing. If we want to bring manufacturing back, if we want to create businesses here, we shouldn't burden them with the cost of insurance. So I think it can be pro-business. President Trump used to think it was pro-business. That's why he touted it in his own books before running.
Okay. I mean, we could probably spend the whole hour talking about it, but you're certainly going to have people who say that it's basically almost impossible to support, but we heard your argument, and then I think the idea certainly sounds appealing, but then you look at some of the costs, it may be almost impossible.
Oh, that was so great for so many reasons. All right, so let me break this down from the top here, because that was a masterclass in dissecting an argument and having a flawless victory, in the words of Mortal Kombat. So, first off, the very first move he makes when she's questioning, hey, what are your thoughts on Medicare for All? Like, we're on Fox News here. You already know what their take is going to be. So what's Rokana's first move? Disarm. Disarm the situation. How do you do that? Very simple. Yeah, Trump supported it. Trump wrote in his book about how great Medicare for All is, and he said we should do a system like that here in the United States. He praised Australia. He praised Canada. In fact, he pushed for that kind of system on multiple occasions. So, boom. Right off the bat, now you just threw this Fox News host for a loop, because in their mind, they're there, I must defend Republicans and defend the president, no matter what they do and no matter what they're for. So I'm going to say, oh, my God, this far-left liberal idea of Medicare for All is so crazy and so wrong. Let's have that discussion. Okay, Congressman Rokana, what do you think of Medicare for All? I agree with President Trump. Right there, her head spinning. I mean, you just hit her with the 1-2. She's reeling, man. She's seeing stars. She's like, wait, what? This doesn't compute in my brain. Okay, so that's thing number one he does is disarm, which I love, and Democrats don't say that enough. They don't make that argument. They don't say, hey, why don't I agree with President Trump? Why doesn't President Trump agree with President Trump? These are arguments you can make. Okay, then, so what does she go on to say? He goes, well, you know, look, the problem with Medicare for All is that it costs a lot, and it leads to rationing, and sometimes even prescriptions aren't covered. Okay, well, a lot of that is just simply not true. It's not true that prescriptions aren't covered. You go to a place that has, you know, a single-payer system, they say, yeah, $10 for everything. Everything, whatever it is, whatever your medicine is, doesn't matter how expensive it is, you pay $10 and you get it. And it's whatever the remainder of the cost is picked up by the taxpayers. So it's just not true that, oh, my God, prescriptions. Again, that's flipped on its head in terms of who really has the problem with the cost of prescription drugs. I mean, we've discussed that in the U.S. here endlessly. And to the rationing care point, everybody rations care. It's just a matter of how you ration it. In the U.S., what we do is called a wallet biopsy. That's not me talking. That's many hospitals and doctors who've pointed this out. They say, look, what we do is a wallet biopsy. We see, hey, how's your insurance? How much money do you have? And that determines the level of care that you get. So we do it based on the size of your wallet. That's how we ration care. How do they ration care in single-payer countries? Based on need. Hey, who needs the care? Okay, you need it the most, you're going to get it first. Come on, let's go. That's the way it works. That's the way it works. And there's no better way to ration care. So people might complain, oh, my God, I have an elective procedure. I wanted to get my teeth done or my fucking chin reduced or whatever the fuck. And they might have to wait. Okay, though, you should have to wait because there are some people who need the help more, like people who just got in a fucking car crash. So you either ration based on need or you ration based on how much money they have. In the U.S., we do it based on money. There, we do it based on need. And just look at the numbers. It proves it. We have 45,000 people that die every year in the U.S. because they don't have access to basic health care. That doesn't exist in Canada or Australia or Norway or Denmark or Iceland or Sweden or France or Finland or the U.K. That doesn't exist. In the U.S., 45,000. And she also says, it costs a lot. Costs a lot? What are you talking about? Now, this is, again, where Ro Khanna, this is where he does so great because sometimes what happens is there are people who get a little too flustered who might be a Democrat trying to defend this position. But Ro Khanna knows his stuff. And when you know your stuff, it's true. Knowledge is power. So what does he do? Immediately he says, look, for the next 10 years, keeping the same system we have, it would cost $49 trillion for our health care. If we do a single-payer system, it'll cost $32 trillion. That's a savings of $17 million. So what you've heard is incorrect. And people do it. It's incredibly misleading. This is another thing that Ro Khanna has pointed out previously on Twitter. He says, look, people always, like, they'll write these fear-mongering articles. They did this about Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders wants a Medicare for All system. It'll cost $32 trillion. But they don't give you the context and say, oh, if we didn't do that, it costs $49 trillion. So it's actually cost saving. And that's when they do a more fair article to Bernie Sanders. Now, that's lacking context. But oftentimes what they'll do is they'll add the cost of the single-payer system on top of what we're paying for our private insurance in our system now and say that's how much it'll cost. What do you mean that's how much? No, it's not. You're adding on top of the system as if the other system would remain intact and we'd add a single-payer system on top of it. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about replacing the system with a single-payer system. $49 trillion it would cost with our terrible private health insurance system with price-gouging middlemen. $49 trillion, it's $32 trillion without. So, again, destroys her argument. And then I love when he comes full circle at the end and does the flawless victory, the Mortal Kombat flawless victory, when he says, look, you know, you care about business. Republicans care about business, right? That's what they say. So you want to know what the biggest small business boost will be if we do a Medicare for All system? Because if we do a Medicare for All system, that means that employers don't have to pick up the cost of the health care anymore. So you don't have health care tied to employment. which also frees up the marketplace and people can go and find jobs they want without having to worry about, oh my God, my kid can't get his fucking medicine if I leave my job and try to find a new one. But it significantly lessens the burden on employers who provide health insurance. So that is a very pro-small business thing, to decouple health insurance from employment. So that's noticed. That's a point that's made that it should disarm conservatives further. And they go, wait, oh, that actually does make sense. And then finally he comes full circle and he brings up Trump again. And he goes, yeah, that's why Trump supported it, because it would actually be great for businesses if we did Medicare for All system. That's one of the reasons President Trump supported it. Boom. Host goes right back into a daze because, fuck, you just brought up how Trump agrees with you on this, and now I have no response. And so what's her response? Well, anyway, that's thank you for joining us, but, you know, a lot of people say it's impossible because the cost, and it's impossible. What? Yeah, the cost and the things, and, you know, sun was in my eyes, and, yeah, Craig and them were down by the store, and they couldn't find the hot dogs that they were looking for. Anyway, the cost is impossible. Thanks for joining us. Bye. Wait, what? None of that makes any sense. Well, yeah, of course it makes no sense because every point you made was debunked. The cost point was thoroughly debunked with the, hey, it costs $49 trillion if we keep the system as is. It will cost $32 trillion if we do single payer. You got nothing. She's out. A lot of people say it's impossible. Yeah, a lot of people who ignore the evidence, like you. So, Ro Khanna, absolute masterclass there, busting up myths left and right. And by the way, man, let's not sell things short here. You don't think this converts people? Of course it converts people. Look at Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders was in West Virginia doing a town hall with Chris Hayes in Trump country, where the audience was entirely Trump supporters. And they cheered and gave a standing ovation to his policy platform when he called for Medicare for All and free college and a living wage. A room full of West Virginia Trump voters who the rest of the Democratic Party, the corporate Democrats, write off. They're never going to vote for us anyway. Stupid back country bumpkins. Fuck them. No way we're going to do that. Forget that. Bernie Sanders is over there getting standing ovations, calling for his populist left platform. So now you have Ro Khanna, Justice Democrat congressman, we're proud to say that, saying, yeah, I'm going to go into the lion's den, and I'm going to make the case for what I believe in, because I think I'm right. And this is again, Ro Khanna says this all the time about primarying him. Because, you know, his colleagues are not happy with him because he's a Justice Democrat. They're like, why? Because that threatens them and their jobs, because Justice Democrats are primarying people. But Ro's answer is always the same. He goes, I don't know why you guys would be mad at me. I support primaries against me. Somebody want to primary me? By all means, primary me. It only makes the party stronger. It only makes the party stronger. And I believe in what I'm talking about. I believe in my ideas. So you can hit me with a Republican. You can hit me with a Democrat. You can run anybody you want against me. The strength of my policy positions, I think I'll win. So I'm not afraid of it. That's powerful. So when you have somebody who's willing to spread the message by going in the lion's den and talking to people who normally disagree, and somebody says, I'm not afraid. I'll tell you exactly what I believe and why I think I'm right. And you, I think I'm going to make you believe it too. That's a winner, man. That's a winner. So we need the Democrats to be a lot more like Ro Khanna. This was an absolutely beautiful back and forth. Okay. Okay. Now, I got one more on Ro, but I'm going to come back to it later. The Republicans in Washington somehow managed to hit a new low this week. Listen to this from Talking Points Memo. With a vote to proceed on repealing Obamacare less than 24 hours away, and with most senators completely in the dark on what they'll be voting on and whether they even have enough support to start the debate, GOP leadership is floating the idea that they can ship a bedridden Senator John McCain across the country to cast the deciding vote. McCain recently found out that he has an extremely aggressive form of brain cancer and took an indefinite leave of absence from the Senate. Still, GOP Whip Senator John Cornyn insisted to reporters on Monday that there is a chance McCain could be flown to D.C. tomorrow. Quote, "We have not yet gotten word, but we're hopeful," he said. "Knowing him, I know he wants to come back as soon as he can physically make it." Asked if there is even time to get a doctor to sign off on the journey and make the arrangements for the trip, Cornyn snapped. I'm not a doctor. I quit after organic chemistry. Senator Roger Wicker went into more graphic detail about McCain's condition, saying that his travel plans hinge on whether his incision has healed to the extent that he can sit in a pressurized cabin for 4 hours. He might get the go-ahead from his doctors this afternoon, Wicker added. We don't know yet, just yet. So they scheduled a vote on Trump Care. They literally don't even know which version of Trump Care they're voting on. These guys are the biggest joke in the world. They have like four different options of shitty bills to pick from. We don't even know which one, but any of them that wreck the health care and health insurance industry in the U.S. sounds good. Well, any one's fine. So they're like, we don't even know which one we're voting on. And the key differences in the policies are huge because you gain support and lose support from different wings of the party based on which one you go with. I don't know if any of them have enough to get through. I'd reckon as of right now that they don't. But they don't know which one they're voting on. They schedule the vote, and they're talking about how John McCain, who was just diagnosed with an aggressive form of brain cancer, like, yeah, you know, we might try to fly him out here and have him vote real quick on it and just, you know, roll him in and prop him up and let him press the button. And the irony, can you imagine John McCain, who's getting treated for an aggressive form of brain cancer because he has health insurance, would take time away when he should be resting to take health insurance away from more people? That would be so disgusting and so ironic, I think the world might break if that happened. There'd be a rip in the space-time continuum if John McCain were to cast that vote. It's just something horrific would happen. You know how I was watching, this is probably bullshit because it was on the History Channel and or Discovery Channel, and now they don't even teach things that are real. Back in the day, they used to. But they say, like, oh, one of the ways the world can end is if the polar, I'm going to fuck this up, the magnetic fields flip or something. I don't know if that's a real thing. But I think that's what will happen if John McCain goes and he's like, yeah, take away health insurance from people as I'm getting treatment for an aggressive form of brain cancer. That sounds about right, doesn't it? Yes. All in favor say aye. Aye. Oh, man. What is going on? The Republicans, just when you think they can't get any lower, they prove you're wrong. All right, guys. Let's take our final break. When we come back, an MSNBC host finally gets mad at Democrats. That might be a first. And then a Democrat has to propose a bill that says the president can't pardon himself. That's where we're at. Stay right there. We'll be right back. MSNBC. This upset me for various reasons. An MSNBC host, Chris Jansing, got mad at the Democrats here for something they decided to do yesterday. So that's a good thing, right? I mean, we are always mad at MSNBC for being too subservient and loyal to the Democrats, regardless of what the Democrats are pushing for. Let's see. Why did she go after them? Was it because they're not pushing free college, or they're not pushing Medicare for All, or they're supporting wars, or what is it? Let's watch.
Wanted to transmit. I said, why don't we maybe we should go over to the Russian embassy to do that? It's so jaw-droppingly inappropriate if you've been in government. And maybe he's just naive, but I don't know. He's not that naive, is he? And Michael Flynn was in the room, who had been director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. I think that early December discussion will be, people will be interested to get a little more detail about that.
I'm out of time, but I have to ask you, what do you make of while they know all of this is happening, they say they have this big message that they need to get out there on the economy. They're going to unveil this, and they're doing it at the same time they know that Jared Kushner is going to be walking the microphone.
Well, Chris, we have to get to the bottom of this Russia scandal. There is obviously
smoke. You're not answering my question.
I am getting there, but there is obviously smoke, and I think we see the first sign of flames. The point, though, is that Democrats have to continue to work for the American people. They can't put their agenda on hold just because this administration is enmeshed in this Russia mess. They need to continue doing the work that Americans elected them to do.
Although maybe they could have done it for an hour or two and gotten a little more airtime. But anyway,
MSNBC hosts are so out of touch that they make the Democrats look like they're in touch. You get what her argument is there, right? She's saying, I don't know why the Democrats are out there talking about jobs and the economy when Jared Kushner is giving a speech and talking about Russia. I mean, hello, Democrats. Obviously, the country is waiting on every word of Jared Kushner. Okay, these guys are so deep in that Washington bubble, they can't see straight. Like somebody said on Twitter the other day, I forget who it was, but when Jared Kushner was giving his little, you know, talk on Russia, he introduced himself. He said, "Hello, I'm Jared Kushner," and then he went on to, you know, talk about what he was going to talk about. And somebody on Twitter was like, "Dude, we know who you are." And I think it was Michael Tracy was like, "Are you really that, like, myopic that you don't realize that most Americans don't know who Jared Kushner is? Like, do you not – they think everybody follows politics in the same way that they do, which is, like, MSNBC hosts and all these establishment insiders in the corporate media and among the corporate Democrats, they look at politics like it's a reality show. Or, like, it's like the West Wing, like a regular TV show. And they look like, ooh, who's the new play? Ooh, Anthony Scaramucci was just hired as the new White House communications director. And, ooh, he says scandalous things from time to time. And, ooh, is Jared Kushner talking about Russia? And, oh, maybe Vladimir Putin is behind him giving this speech. Oh. They think, like, well, obviously the Democrats should take all their time to talk about Jared Kushner and Russia. How out of touch are you? She literally got mad at the Democrats for doing the one decent thing they've done in forever, which is, oh, let's give a press conference and talk about jobs and the economy and our economic vision and unroll our new platform, basically. Now, the Democratic platform was good in some parts, bad in other parts. I mean, it omitted Medicare for All and free college and things that are non-negotiable that should be the heart of what they're pushing for. But there were some good antitrust things in there, and there were some good prescription drug negotiation ideas in there and stuff like that. So, but the Democrats are actually focusing, this is a rare instance where the Democrats are focusing on real issues, and MSNBC is like, why wouldn't you talk about Russia? Kushner's talking about Russia, and Russia. If the corporate Democrats and the corporate media get their way, and they steer the Democratic Party in whatever direction they want, the Democrats would lose every election from here on out. Even with as bad as the Republicans are, the Democrats would keep losing. Because nobody cares, man. Nobody cares. No regular person is sitting around going, fucking Kremlin! Ah, the goddamn Kremlin! That's why I have a hard time keeping these lights on. Nobody's doing that. Now, you might say, well, Kyle, you're too much in your own bubble here. Really? Take a look at this chart. This is from Bloomberg, a Bloomberg poll. What issues matter? Healthcare, 35%. Jobs, 13%. Terrorism, 11%. Immigration, 10%. Global warming, 10%. Russia, at the very bottom, 6%. So don't tell me that your insider corporate, you know, position here, don't tell me that your establishment insider wisdom is real, because it's not. It's only you in your bubble with your fellow politicos at MSNBC where you drink your fucking chai tea and you're like, let's talk more about Russia. It's only you guys that really care about that shit. Everybody else is worried about paying the medical bills. Everybody else is worried about how they're going to get rid of that college debt. Everybody's worried about getting a better paying job that has better benefits because they don't get any goddamn vacation time right now and they're underpaid and they're overworked. Everybody's worried about real shit. And MSNBC hosts, the media is supposed to hold politicians accountable. Instead of holding politicians accountable and saying, hey, you know what, the Democrats, they're talking about jobs today. Where were they for the past, I don't know, 3 years? Where were they talking about Medicare for All? Where were they talking about free college? Where were they talking about ending the drug war? Where were they talking about the wars? All this time they didn't do any of it. Now, finally, they come around to talking about real shit. Instead of saying that, what's your take? Ah, these Democrats. You know, they should really not talk about jobs and the economy and talk about Russia and Jared fucking Kushner more. By the way, did you notice Jared Kushner? We're on, what, our 6th, 7th story of the day or something now? Jared Kushner, I didn't even talk about Jared Kushner's speech. What the fuck am I going to say? Jared Kushner, a douchebag who looks like he's never shaved in his life, who's a product of nepotism, and he's, you know, Trump's son-in-law, he gave a speech where he said, I didn't collude with Russia. Okay, what am I going to do? Can I say, maybe you did? Democrats, why don't you go out there and say, maybe he did collude with Russia? Rust Belt voters are really waiting on every fucking word of Jared Kushner and your response to it. shoot me in the head with how out of touch people are. Okay. Next. So apparently the country is having a serious conversation as to whether or not the president has the ability to pardon himself, which is insane. And this prompted a Democratic congressman to propose a new bill. Listen to this. Representative Al Green, a Democrat of Texas, said he plans to introduce a bill that would prevent presidents from being able to pardon themselves, according to a statement from his office. Green said he believes that giving the president the power to self-pardon would make the leader above the law, making the United States, he believes, a country of laws for all but the president. To allow such would not only place the president above the law, it would make the president his own final judge, jury, and prosecutor, Green said in a statement. The president would, in fact, become the law. Green said he plans to introduce the bill because of love for my country, adding that the phrase, no one is above the law, is the heart of American jurisprudence, according to his statement. The statement comes among increasing reports that Trump is considering using his power to pardon himself or other members of his administration for any offenses related to the Russian probe, though Trump attorney Jay Sekulow has insisted that officials are not even discussing Trump's ability to issue pardons. Quote, we're not researching the issue because the issue of pardons is not on the table. There's nothing to pardon from, Sekulow said Sunday. Okay, so look. Yeah, you want to talk about, oh, crimes. What fucking crimes were committed? Yeah, I actually have that same goddamn question. What crimes were committed? What crimes were committed? Now, are there crimes Trump has actually committed? Yes. In regards to this Russia thing, what even theoretically is the crime? Collusion. You're not allowed to get dirt on your opponent from a foreign government. Well, number one, we don't even know if they did that because they didn't seemingly get any information, even though Trump Jr. tried. But number two, if that's your standard, you can't get dirt on your opponent from a foreign government, that's exactly what Hillary did with Ukraine also. So if Trump and his campaign are guilty of it with Russia, Hillary and her campaign are guilty of it with Ukraine. And it's just information. I don't give a fuck. People are so stuck on this, and it's driving me crazy. So yes, what is there to pardon from? I agree with them on that front when it comes to this specific issue. But in reality, what things Trump has done that might actually merit impeachment or might actually merit some sort of legal action? Oh, I don't know. Maybe the fact that he's continuing Obama's illegal wars. We're doing a war in seven different countries. Seven countries. Now, we didn't declare war in five of those seven countries. The way it's supposed to work is you're supposed to go through Congress and get a declaration of war if the U.S. goes to war. Well, now we just don't do that. Now we do war in seven countries. We got the approval for two of them, Iraq and Afghanistan. And now every war that we've done since then, we just, you know, add on to the authorization for the use of military force for Iraq and Afghanistan. You go all the way back to 2003 and say, yeah, that includes what we're doing now in Yemen and Pakistan and Somalia and Libya. But that's not true. So Obama was waging an illegal war doing these things, and now Trump is doing it as well, massacring civilians with drone strikes. They loosened the rules of engagement in Somalia. I mean, they were already lax, and they weren't abiding by them. Now they're like, yeah, let's get rid of them even more. In Trump's first military act as president, he approved a raid that killed at least 30 civilians, including an 8-year-old girl. An 8-year-old American girl. You can't just assassinate American children with no due process. No, you can't do that, but he did that. Now, you want to talk about something that's impeachable or that's a crime? That's a fucking crime. That's a war crime. You're going to kill an 8-year-old American girl? Just assassinate her in a botched raid? That's fine. But we're so used to the war crimes, we're so used to the illegal wars that nobody even brings this up. But they're really talking about, ooh, did you meet with somebody who happened to be Russian? Now, furthermore, you want to talk about other things that Trump did that he shouldn't be allowed to do or that it actually might be illegal and unconstitutional. He violated the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution. You can't have self-dealings between the president, and he can't be financially, personally wrapped up and profiting from other countries. He has. There's no question about that. He's got these hotels all around the world, and he has somebody from China come and stay in this hotel, and they pay him a colossal amount of money because they're trying to buy favors. Same thing with Saudi Arabia. Stayed in his D.C. hotel, paid him hundreds of thousands of dollars for, like, a short stay. Why? Because they're trying to buy favor. They're trying to, you know, do something corrupt. I will give you a lot of money. You will give me this policy decision. And look, what happened? They just armed them. They just gave him a tremendous amount of money in arms. Why? Because they're corrupt. Behind the scenes, they're making these deals. Trump has registered eight new businesses in Saudi Arabia during the campaign. He's got businesses in 12 different countries, Trump does. You're telling me he's not profiting from those governments? Of course he's profiting from those governments. That's a clear violation of the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution. So is he doing something that's illegal? Yes, but it's not the Russia thing. Now to the heart of the article. We're really having this conversation as to whether or not the president can pardon himself? Are you fucking kidding me? If the president can pardon himself, that renders the entire idea of checks and balances irrelevant. We have no checks and balances. The president gets to do whatever, gets to be above the law and say, I declare that I cannot be punished for this. So that means we don't have a president, we have a dictator. That's what it would be. We have a dictator. We have a tyrant. We have an absolute authority with an authoritarian leader who gets to do whatever they want and get away with it, and there are no consequences. That is obviously not the case in the United States of America when we have checks and balances worked into our system, and when we have separation of powers, and we say nobody's above the law. Nobody's above the law. Equal protection of the law. Nobody's above it. So I can't believe we're even having this conversation. No, he can't fucking pardon himself. No, of course not. Ugh. Yeah. We're up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. That's how I feel reading all these stories. All right, next. I have a story here about a church in the South that's so bizarre and so extreme that it's legitimately hard to believe, but it turns out to be true. So look at this. A North Carolina church that is already under investigation for kidnapping a gay man and attempting to beat his homosexuality out of him is once again in the spotlight after it was revealed that the church members have been importing worshipers from Brazil and turning them into slaves. According to the Associated Press, the Word of Faith Fellowship recruits young members from two affiliated churches in Brazil to come to the U.S. on tourist and student visas, where they are put to work on the church's 35-acre compound in Spindale for no pay. One man, identified as Andre Oliveira, told the AP that he was forced to work 15 hours a day, usually for no pay, cleaning offices and warehouses owned by the evangelical church. He was also forced to work at private businesses owned by some of the church's ministers. Oliveira stated that failure to comply resulted in beatings and shaming from the pulpit. Beatings and shaming from the pulpit. Now, also, these guys had their passports taken from them when they got here. That's a clear sign of forced labor. They take their passports from them, and then they make them live in a crowded basement with eight other people. So basically, a North Carolina church was just kidnapping people and using them as slaves. That's what's happening. And we actually covered this church recently when they kidnapped a gay man and tried to beat his homosexuality out of him. We covered that. Shock. That church was engaged in some other very questionable, outright criminal activities. I mean, fucking pretend like, well, Jesus, we're all about Jesus, you know, Jesus. Jesus was big on beating people who were disobedient, and he was big on keeping slaves, as is
thing and stuff, bro, you know, turn the other cheek and then go shackle your slave and beat him and force him to work 15 hours a day. That's what Jesus said, if I remember correctly. Okay. All right, now let's talk about the Internet Bill of Rights. So I'm sure many of you have been watching this slow decline of net neutrality, where Ajit Pai and Trump's FCC are just, feels like forever, they're, you know, working in these new rules, and it's going to be all but gone, net neutrality, in a short period of time. And it's a scary thing to watch. Well, Justice Democrat Ro Khanna released what he's calling his Internet Bill of Rights. And it's an outline of some policies that every Democrat should get behind to ensure a free and open Internet and to fight back against Ajit Pai and the FCC and the destruction of net neutrality. So here's what he says. He wants a right to universal web access, a right to net neutrality, a right to be free from warrantless metadata collection, so that's a clear shot at the NSA, a right to disclose amount, nature, and dates of secret government data requests, a right to be fully informed of scope of data use, and a right to be informed when there is change of control over data. Now, that last one is a shot at the Republicans, who recently gutted your internet privacy. It was a bill that had only a 6% approval rating. The Republicans all voted for it, and Trump signed it. It used to be the case that a company would need your approval to sell your data to a third party. Now they don't. Now they can sell to whoever they want. So, yet again, this is Ro Khanna doing amazing work. And I agree with him on every one. I mean, net neutrality. So for those of you who don't understand the issue, basically the way it works is, net neutrality is what we had. The FCC rules guaranteed us net neutrality, which is the idea that the internet service providers cannot micromanage your internet. So they cannot slow down certain websites because they don't like those websites or those websites are in competition with them. You have equal access all around the internet. If you get rid of net neutrality, which is what they're doing, well, now you're going to have the internet creates a slow lane. The internet service providers create a slow lane. And anybody who's their competition or who doesn't pay their bribes to the internet service provider, they're going to get a slower connection. There's already been stories about this with some testing going on with some places. You had Verizon recently slow up access to Netflix. So this segments and fragments the internet. And so you need to pick your internet service provider to see who they have deals with to get the faster speed. And you know, you're gonna, a lot of sites that you might go to or services you might use are left out, and then you can't get good speed on those sites. So this is just a horrible idea. It says the internet is no longer a public utility, which is crazy. It should be a public utility. So Ro Khanna is saying, no, we have a right to the internet being a public utility. We have a right to the NSA leaving us the fuck alone, and we have a right to know what's happening with our information on the internet if a company tries to sell it or something. So I think Ro is 100% right, and, you know, the issue of net neutrality is a very important issue, and I feel like this is an issue where the people get it, but the politicians don't talk about it much, and they don't make it a key issue. But it really should be a key issue. I mean, it's right up there, man, because when net neutrality goes, they can control the flow of information so much more. You know, everybody's afraid, oh, my God, free speech, free speech, free speech. There's going to be crackdowns on free speech. Well, this is how the crackdown on free speech comes. Because in the United States of America, we have the First Amendment, so the government cannot regulate speech like that. But what they can do is basically outsource it to giant corporations, and corporations, they can speed up or slow down access to whatever website they want. And if those websites are saying the wrong things, if those websites aren't paying their bribes, then yes, their speech is effectively being censored. So this is the real crackdown on free speech, and everybody should unify on this issue to fight Ajit Pai and Trump's FCC for basically destroying the internet. All right, final story real quick. I got to breeze through this, but it will be short. I want to give everybody an update on the issue of Medicare for All and Justice Democrats and how far we've come because of all of you. So look at this. This is on Twitter. It's Justice Democrats. They say, since we began our Medicare for All petition, 42 additional co-sponsors have signed on to support H.R. 676. 42 additional co-sponsors, Democratic congresspeople, now support Medicare for All because of you. So we moved 42 people. Only 80 House Democrats are left who don't support it. So we have to keep fighting. I make this mistake pretty often where we harp away on this issue for a while, and then I forget to bring it up for a while in terms of bringing up the petition. But the petition is really what's driving this. And it's Justice Democrats putting the hard work and all of you signing your name in support that's really moving these politicians. So the petition is justicedemocrats.com/singlepayer. Sign that petition. Sign it. Because it is working. It is moving Congress people. We moved 42 of them. You moved 42 of them. And just to give you a little heads up as to some of the ones who are still not supporting it. Nancy Pelosi, not supporting Medicare for All. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, not supporting Medicare for All. Steny Hoyer, not supporting it. And Joaquin Castro, somebody who is considering running for president, is not supporting Medicare for All. So let's not take no for an answer. Let's keep fighting. And remember, you're making waves in Washington. I told you, we had John Conyers, who wrote this bill, come out and publicly thank Justice Democrats repeatedly because he said, look, it wasn't me. I wrote the legislation, but you guys did the hard work, and you guys got people to say, yeah, we're in favor of it, and it's you forcing them to that position that worked. So let's keep fighting. Let's keep fighting because you're writing your name in the history books here by dragging the Democrats to the proper position, which 62% of the American people agree with, and which every other modern nation has one version or another of a single-payer system. We can't be just as good as every other nation, or we can't create a Medicare for All system that's better than every other nation. We want to be number one in healthcare. That's what Justice Democrats want. We want an A-plus in healthcare, number one in the world. We want to beat out everybody. The only way to do that is a Medicare for All system. The only way we're going to get there is if you sign the petition and we keep fighting. Call your congresspeople, too, if you have it. If they support it, call them and thank them. If they don't support it, call them and tell them, I'm just letting you know that I am voting you out and everybody I know is voting against you because you don't support Medicare for All. And watch how quickly they change. So it's working. That's the point. It's working. So I wanted to give you an update on how far we've come, but we still have 80 left, and we're not going to stop. We have to keep fighting and keep fighting until we get virtually everybody on board with it, a unified Democratic Party around populist left issues and important issues like Medicare for All. Let's fight. Let's win. JusticeDemocrats.com/singlepayer. Okay. Out of time, guys. I love you. Kyle and Corin tomorrow. And we will talk to you then. Peace. Mwah.